We welcome you again, this time part number two of our conversation with Lake Chelan School District Superintendent Barry DePauli. We hope you had the chance to listen in on part one, a lot of good information. We're going to continue the conversation, so much to talk about as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and the subsequent shutdown of the school districts and all that that has entailed in terms of social distance learning, trying to feed the students, what the students are missing, graduation. We talked about that in part number one of the program. Barry, I know, and by the way, welcome back once again. We thank you. One of your biggest concerns, as you have reported a couple of times at various meetings, has been the worry about the social and emotional health of the students. Explain that to us.
Yeah, Dennis, we, you know, we're always working with our students and doing our best to support them. And I think one of the things that we know more than ever now is our school system, when we're in a face-to-face model, does that fairly well. We're able to keep track of those students and visit with them. And then when we go to a remote learning model, it's much more difficult to keep those students engaged and take care of their basic needs. So one of the things we're finding, Dennis, is that you know, the kids that aren't being successful in remote learning lack primarily executive functioning skills. That's one of the things we've learned. So to be able to plan a day and plan structure in their day, they really struggle with that. They struggle with the idea of being an independent learner. So we've got some work to do there. That's certainly one of our learning. The social-emotional aspect from the student standpoint, you know, when you look at the isolation, not being around their friends, not being able to go to school, and let's be honest, Dennis, we both went to high school, and the academic piece is so important, but for most kids, it's social interaction. It's about being on a team. It's about being in a club. It's about being in the band. It's about being with your friends, and we totally stripped that from these kids, so that's a difficult time, and even when you look at kindergarten and you know, our Morgan Owens students, the first thing they'll say is they miss their friends, they miss their teacher. And as much as our staff misses our students, I think kids, if they're honest, they'll tell you know that they really miss school, and they might not have said that. I think we take a lot for granted. So yeah, that is a concern of ours, and we're dealing with that. You know, we're fortunate to have Kristen Sowers, who is nationally renowned as a social emotional learning expert. We're partnering with the executive director of Thrive, Kayla Hellingson, and the Manson School District, and we're going to have Kristen come in and work with our staff. It may be virtually now, but we're going to get a lot of insights and a full day of professional development on how to best support our staff, but also how to support our students. So that social-emotional piece is way bigger than I think most people realized. So we're going to do all we can when we look at reopening in the fall and adjusting how we can best serve our students. Most people will tell you, Dennis, that social-emotional aspect of learning is as important as the content. So if you don't have those self-awareness, self-regulation skills, executive functioning skills, you aren't going to do as well in life. So we want to make sure that we definitely infuse those skills when we come back.
I know you conducted a counseling survey that was sent out to parents and students, and you got, I'm not sure of your return rate on that. And obviously, Barry, the goal is, as you do distance learning like this, you would like to say, yeah, we're going to have 100% of our students involved. That's not reality, obviously. And I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit about what the engagement process has been like in terms of the number or the percentage of students that have been weighing in and getting the coursework done online.
So I think engagement's been the biggest challenge, and this is nationwide, Dennis. So the statistics nationally are about 30% of students are engaged. So we're looking at 7 of 10 kids who are not engaged, and that's fairly typical. In the state of Washington, I serve on a reopening schools group. I represent our region, and what I'm gleaning from that is it's similar depending on the school district. For us, it depends on the day. Usually it's about 50 to 60% engagement. We do packets as well as Mo, as well as the distance learning. And in some cases, you know, students are focusing on classes they like, and they'll do that work. And for other students, they've simply not engaged. So we do keep accurate records. We try to call students. We have call lists that our counselors utilize, as well as our principals, to get a hold of those kids who are not engaging. And I'll be honest, Dennis, we have a number of kids, probably 30 plus, who are working full time. and trying to work full time and keep your grades up and your studies up is almost impossible. So that's probably the biggest challenge of this model moving forward. I know we did some survey work. I want to credit our counseling staff, Stephanie Tischler at Mo, along with Derek Todd and Nisha Bremeyer at the middle high school. And we've done a counseling survey. We didn't get a great return rate, but I think enough to scale it up and realize that one of the things students are saying is too much work, not enough help. And we're realizing that they're really struggling with their executive functioning skills and trying to plan their day. So that, with the isolation that they're experiencing, has given us some insights in terms of how we can improve this model if we have to go back to it anytime next year.
Now, we haven't touched on, well, other than some cursory discussion, one of the other major elements of school, learning, obviously, friendships, obviously, but you mentioned athletics, and then, of course, clubs as well. Chelan is known for a number of very active clubs. I will touch on a few, and forgive me if I don't hit them all, because I won't. But, you know, FFA, FBLA, you've got the band, you've got cheerleading, you've got all the various athletic sports that take place fall, winter, and spring. And it gauges a tremendous amount of the student population at Chelan High School, middle school, and they're gone. They've been by the wayside since this spring. And I'm curious, how has that resonated? How are the coaches kind of, because there will be kids coming back next year, not everybody's graduating, how do you kind of keep that cohesiveness and keep the links between the school, the coaches, and the athletes or the club members?
I think that's been really difficult for us, Dennis, as it has been in all school districts. But I know we have such a vibrant club program as well as athletics. I can think of, for example, the Chelan Project that April Slagle runs, and we have about 100 plus, maybe 150 kids in that club. They do hiking. They do a lot of really unique events, and it really kind of is the glue that holds a lot of those kids together and keeps their motivation levels high. And you mentioned a lot of the other clubs that are happening and also our Interact club. So when you look at that, we've always been really proud of our club program. I think we have one of the best club programs of a school our size, maybe even in the state. And our kids know that and our faculty know that. We have a lot of pride in those programs. Those clubs add so much to reinforcing learning and some of the life lessons that we want kids to have about getting a really sound whole education. And our athletic program is exactly that as well. A lot of lessons that aren't learned in the classroom are learned on fields and courts and gyms. And taking that away from students really takes a lot of their inspiration and motivation to be at school or learn at school when it's not there. So I think our coaches have tried to keep in touch with kids best they can, but it's awfully difficult. Kids not being able to have that outlet, Dennis, and be able to perform and compete, it's a big part of who they are. And we have tremendous participation rates throughout our school in all those programs. If you look at just the spring, 6 sports got canceled. And all those clubs you mentioned and I mentioned are gone. So you think about 200 or 300 kids involved in those programs, and all of a sudden that time is gone, and they have all this free time on their plate again. So that's been a real challenge for us. So we're really hoping that we'll be able to reopen and have some of those opportunities for our students.
And of course, which is pretty typical, there are always positions to be filled in school districts, and you've been busy this spring, even though you don't know the status of coming of some of the athletic programs. There's going to be new head coaches in boys and girls basketball, new head coach for the wrestling program, so a new athletic director coming up down the line. So nothing stops, does it?
Yeah, we've been, there's been some changes in our athletic program. I think most people are aware that Pat Chisholm, a former student, and he's been involved in our wrestling program for a long, long time, is going to take over the head spot. And we're excited to have Randy Gleisman, who's been a big part of the program and building the program, the youth program, will be joining Pat. I think Pat was a student of Randy, so there's a great camaraderie there. I'm excited for our wrestling program and what Pat can do there with Randy's assistance. We hired Nick Longmire, who's going to take over our girls basketball position. He was the assistant coach this year. And we have one more hire at the head boys basketball coach. And I believe, Dennis, by Friday we'll have a decision. I know Roger DeBoer was offered the position, and recently, this past week, he has decided not to take the position simply because of family reasons, and his son's a senior, so unfortunately, we won't be getting Roger. He's a storied coach from Linden. I think you know him well from being over there, but we are excited. There's some other candidates in the pool, and we'll be able to let our public know who will take on that program and that important position probably by Friday. We also have an athletic director position up, and it's interesting, Dennis, we have over 30 applicants for that position covering 10 states. 20 of those 30 have completed the application. That position closes on June 5th, so there's still time yet. We'll be screening for that position, looking at those candidates on the 8th of June. The interviews will take place on the 10th. We'll do some reference checking and likely offer a position by the 15th. So we're looking forward to allowing that position a little bit more time. We'll likely attach some other duties to that. And one of those duties may well be safety, just because of all the challenges we'll have reopening schools and keeping students safe. We'll need some energy and expertise in that area. So we're excited about that opportunity and kind of a new culture in the athletic program. Lots of changes there, but we're hopefully going to be, we'll be able to have an athletic program. I think that's what we're worried about at this point, but hopefully that'll come together.
Yeah, certainly so. And I know you've got a defending state champion volleyball team that's pretty excited about the talent they have coming back still, and I know they'd like to hit the court along with the football team and cross country and all those other sports that will be soccer in the fall coming up, so we'll cross our fingers on that. Barry, let's talk a little bit about, and we don't have to get into this too deeply, but the financial aspect of the pandemic, because when business closes down, sales taxes dwindle, and sales taxes are a piece, of course, of how school districts survive. You indicate this year won't be impacted much, but down the line, that could create some problems.
Yeah, that is a big topic of conversation across the state, Dennis, with our board. And as you know, we, our budget manager, contracted COVID just in mid-March and spent a long time in the hospital, actually on a ventilator, and thankfully has made it through that after about 30 days. So we're looking at, you know, these last few months have been challenging with not having that person next to us, and we've been working with our ESD. But yeah, it's a concern of mine. I think we're going to be in a good place this coming year. We have a good fund balance. Our business manager did a good job managing those finances, but we will have to look at some belt tightening going forward. Dennis, you've probably heard the state superintendent talking about the possibility of a 10-15% cut, hopefully not to basic education, but federal programs, state programs. So will it'll have an impact on us. What we worry about most, Dennis, to be honest, is just enrollment. We don't know, we don't have a good idea of what our enrollment is because of what we're in with COVID right now and the lack of response from students. So how many families have left the area is a question. We do know, I've talked to a number of realtors who say that they're seeing an increase in families moving to the area, people wanting to get out of the city, get out of the traffic and some of the things going on in cities. So we're hopeful that that's going to bring in some enrollment for us. But we do, as you know, apportionment funding for schools is based on enrollment. So that's a question mark. So we're watching that very carefully. We also have to have consideration about, you know, we are a sales revenue tax state. And as you know, we haven't had a lot of sales in terms of business recently. So how will that impact us? We'll have to be ready for that. So we've looked at with our board, and I've shared a little bit of this staff, we'll be really protecting the treasury, as I might say. We've been fortunate, and we've had quite a bit of attrition, Dennis, at the Morgan Owens Elementary School. We probably will not be replacing three of the staff who've retired, who've left, and we're able to do that. We're going to tighten our belts a little bit there. We've downsized our high school about a position and a half, and also the middle school about one position. So we're going to really do our best to maximize our categorical funding, which we do get from the state. We'll be limiting expenditures as much as we can. And following, you know, this summer, there'll likely be a hiring freeze. We're going to have to really be careful and look at some smart staffing in the future. So a chance to get leaner. I don't think we're going to sacrifice the quality of education that we are going to put out to students in our community, but it will be a little bit challenging for us. And, you know, I think many businesses are facing the same thing. And we're a public entity. We depend on tax dollars, so it's understandable. We'll do our best. We've been through some of this before in 2008. But I think we're ahead of the game, Dennis, and we're starting that planning right now.
Barry, we're going to wrap up this two-part episode with kind of a look. I'm going to ask you to put on your forecasting hat here a little bit and take a look ahead to the 2020-21 school year. You're hearing a lot of things in the news about what may or may not happen. School, some people think, will open. Some think it'll be maybe a combination, alternate days, half the students on one day, whatever that might look like, perhaps even maybe being schooled at a distance again at home. How are you looking at this for the next school year? What plans are you maybe working on that you could share at this time? And how do you see this playing out?
Yeah, that's a great question, Dennis. That's been taking up a lot of our time here in our district. And I think across the state, most superintendents are spending a lot of time in this area, and rightly so. We've got lots to think about. I said earlier in our first interview that this has been the biggest leadership challenge of my career. And one of the things that I've done is I've had the privilege of sitting on a state work group. So getting that information out from the state and hearing about it, being able to bring it back to our district and then parallel that thinking with how we move forward has been really important. That state work group, interestingly, former Governor Greg Warr and I believe Bill Gates have funded a research team called Key West, and it's out of the Challenge Seattle group. And they have done extensive research throughout the world in about 15 different countries, interviewing principals, teachers, parents, and even students. And they've gleaned that research and brought it back to the state. So we're using some of those guidelines to think about. But as we move forward, Dennis, one thing that I want to say, and you know, I think about where our nation's at right now, and I think we have to all recognize what's happening here. And I think the reason it's even more important to get school back in session, because our schools play a big role in healing. I think they can play a huge role in healing our nation. Education's an important part of that. So as we think about reopening, we're also thinking about that in addition to the challenges of COVID. And I want to make that very clear that we want our students to know they'll have lots of support in our school. Our goal, Dennis, is to reopen schools this fall. In order to create the capacity to do that, there's a lot of discussion that needs to take place. But that decision will really be garnered by where the Department of Health is. They will be providing a regulatory framework for us to maintain individual and public health. So whatever decisions are made, we will be under those guidelines. And I'm getting a lot of emails, Dennis, and comments of people who I know in the community about we need to reopen schools regardless. And what I would say is we absolutely do, but we also need to be very cognizant of the guidelines that are put out by our health department and make sure we follow them. And the reason I say that, Dennis, is for a couple reasons. One is the science behind that. You know, we've had some presentations by epidemiologists on this committee, and they're looking at three different models of what could occur. The biggest scare is that we could see a surge in the fall, late fall, early winter, and it mirrors pandemics of the past. And this is the work of a guy named Dr. Osterholm out of the University of Minnesota, who's a pandemic expert. And he really has a concern about this mirroring what happened in the Spanish flu in 1918. And so we have to be prepared, Dennis, that we may have to pivot and go back into a complete distance learning model again. So that's a big challenge for us. But as I look at just the transmission rates by age in our own county, and these are pretty current. I just presented these yesterday to a group. People who are under 19, out of that population group, there's about 26% of the cases in our county, which is 44 people, and that's Chelan and Douglas. 10% of the total COVID issues in our county are that age group. And then we look at 20 to 39, 40 to 59, and it's all about similar. It's about 25%. And that's where most of our teachers are. So we have to be very, very concerned about how we control the virus when we do open. There's actually three models that the state's looking at, Dennis, and we're looking at these models in two different venues, one being the operational side of things, the health side, and then obviously the teaching and learning side. Most of my focus so far has been on the teaching and learning piece. We're now starting to talk about, you know, what that looks like from a health standpoint. The first model is distance learning 2.0. We've got to be ready to take on remote learning at any point in time, and it could even be starting that way depending on where the state's at. The second model is more of a hybrid model where we'd bring in students on a rotation basis. That'd be a bit more restricted format, probably alternative days. And then the third model that the state's considering is a model that they call the phase-in model, which would be when we just bring in certain groups of population. So, for example, our most vulnerable kids may be coming in first to get oriented. So special education, migrant students, EL students. That's basically the three different models, and we have to be prepared for any one of those, Dennis. So our preparations now will be forming work groups to look at those three models. What I've learned as a leader, it's important to listen more than ever now. So communicating that to the public, we have a survey out there for parents. I think we had about 100 responses so far. I encourage parents to go to our website, complete those surveys. There's also surveys coming out for students and staff. We had a work group meeting yesterday with about 60 folks, teachers, parents, students, and administrators. So we've taken that input. We're going to use that to inform and influence our decisions. These decisions will be made as a community. So the more student voice and family voice we get, the better off we are. And I'll say this, Dennis, I'm going to be dogged about getting to every population. So I'm concerned that oftentimes as educators, we assume things, we make decisions. We can no longer do that. We need to get to every family and know what their needs are so we can support them. We're looking at engaging folks in phone conversations that we can't get to through Zoom who don't have access. And it's going to be our mission to get as much input as we can to help us inform, make these really important decisions as we move forward.
And I'm curious, Barry, in those three models, do any one of those three bring into account extracurricular activities, and would they be held maybe in version 1, 2, or 3? And when I say extracurricular, talking about clubs, organizations, and certainly the athletic programs, and do you work with the WIAA, for example, on some of this as well in preparation for next year?
Yeah, there's been WIA members on the committee. I'm sure that they'll come out with some ideas for the models as well. That hasn't been as big a focus on the work group. There's going to be more conversation about that. They're planning on having some guidance out as early as June 8th or at the latest by June 12th. That is a big conversation, Dennis. And as you know, you're looking at NCAA programs across the country and how they're handling this. But it is going to be largely dictated by the Department of Health. As many emails as I get and questions as I get, I always make sure people understand that we have so much local control, but in the end, the Department of Health will have that final say. We've had to make some pivots regarding our graduation program regarding that. We're state employees, so we will have to follow that guidance. And, you know, I know they're going to do their best as they look at this, but it's extremely challenging, Dennis. If you just think about starting school, and let's say we're on an A-B schedule, and the bus shows up to the first bus stop. Are those kids going to be temperature monitored before they get on the bus? The bus drivers can't do that. The law says they have to remain in their buses. Well, we have to have a paraprofessional who's trained to do those temperature checks. Will students have to wear masks before they get on the bus? What if students forget the mask when they're on the bus? So there is lots of logistics around this, but I'm fairly confident that, you know, we have some great thinkers on our staff and in our community. We will come up with some ways to make this work, and it's certainly going to be challenged, but I can say that we're up for the challenge. We had a great meeting yesterday, and we really want to thank those parents and students, and we'll just continue this conversation and continue the input. And I know we're better together, and we'll work on this as a community. I've seen this community rise many, many times, and I know they'll be up for this as well.
Barry, I want to thank you so much and for your candor. in answering a number of questions over the past couple of days of this program. Before we sign off, your opportunity now, any maybe last thing you'd like to tell your community or pass along?
Yeah, I'm just grateful to be in this position. We have learned a lot over the last couple months, and I think we're going to look at this as a way to look at not just how do we reopen schools, but what have we learned that will influence us to think about restoring, reconstructing, and even redesigning how we deliver education. We've learned a lot. We want to know more from our community. I want to listen to what ideas community has. Welcome to email me at any time or give me a call. I'm committed to getting more and more information from our community and our students and our families. And I want you to know that our school district, including our school board, is going to do their very best job to reopen schools, be better than ever, and offer the best education we can to this community because they deserve it.
Barry DePauli, Lake Chelan School District Superintendent. Barry, we thank you so much for your time.